Yeah, why not? Yeah, is it back again, the sound? All right. So, alhamdulillah. What's our news this week? Our news this week is the Hajj has now fully launched, and those that you are serious about wanting to guide towards the Tarbiyah program, the Hajj program, then tomorrow they need to be on this live session that will happen tomorrow. So that's very important. So if there's people that you're talking to about the Hajj, then make sure that they know that tomorrow they can go to on any of the social media accounts and the like, and then they will be able to they'll be able to join the live session. That session tomorrow, we should probably have one here actually in Cheadle for the local community as well. And we'll probably use the same presentation actually. It's one where we're going to explain the differences between what shifting, non-shifting, and Medina first, Mecca first, and all of the kind of practical questions that people have. The cost of programs, what's luxury, what's premium, what's not, blah, blah. But then also some of the more nuanced points. Anyways, that's all happening tomorrow. That's that. What's happening here? Yeah, we know it's sweets, mashallah. Don't make us do qabza on them. We want reasons, justifications, because I'm a rock. Okay, mashallah, that's good. Khalas. Which way are we going to prioritize? Because we also have yani, special delivery. You know, I mentioned Ibrahim and Abu Ibrahim, mashallah, they had baby Halima. So, they decided to send us yani, enough sweets for all of Cheadle, Manchester, Glossop, Hyde, Sheffield, the Peak District. Huh? No. Is this the paper one? Oh, it's the paper one. That doesn't mean there's any difference in the quantity. It's a proper double, by the way. It's legit behavior. Now, obviously, she has sent this. Sharing her happiness, isn't it? And she's sharing her happiness with her family, the LP family. And that isn't just you people here. We have the real people, yani, online. You know, not like you, naqli lot, yeah, who only turn up and don't watch the lessons, don't study, do anything, just turn up. So, and you know that I am the representative of all these people. And so, let me just look at my people because I've got to look after them. Yeah. So I should show how that works. Quality Street. I'm not going to be. It'll be celebrations and heroes for me, bro. It wouldn't be Quality Street.
No, I did it. It's £18 a box.
18 quid. 18 quid for this. Behave yourself. Right.
No, but you choose your own place, you can run it.
Yeah, but yeah, and it's not exactly flipping Chamambé and Walker, whatever it's called. Chamambé and what's it called? What's the nice one called? Something and Walker. What's that brand called? Is it not Chamambé and Walker? Or Chambert and Walker? That's legit chocolate, yara.
Sounds like
That's because you're just a hater, that's why, all right? You can't even let me enjoy myself. It's not, yeah, I didn't say Chardonnay. I said Chambert, I think, or Chamambert or something. Some real banda online, you know, one of the real people is gonna now tell me. Anyway, Farida, she's saying the purple one, I'll have this on your behalf. Zareen, wa alaikum salam, I'll have this on your behalf. Shut up, what do you care about enemy people? These are the original people. I'm the representative, they've made me representative. What's it got to do with you? Sarah, walaikum salam, I'll have that on your behalf. Alia, I'll have that on your behalf. Aisha, because I know that you wouldn't want me to waste yours, okay? Irm, walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. For you, I'll have that one. Hanifa, we will have, listen, slow down. Hanifa, Ghufran, for you, I'm going to have a purple one, all right? Just for you. Maizib, she's far away. She's in Toronto. She definitely wants me to have yani, something that has real value. We'll do the caramel for you. Okay, then. Let's have a look. Who else yani, needs to be represented? Zara needs to be represented. Zara, what would you like me to have on your behalf? I'll have another caramel one, just in case they run out. Okay. Suad is there. For Suad, we will have, because yani, special, we'll have a chewy version for her. Hajra, what shall I have for you? I'll have this. Is that like the almond one or noisette, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Now, Muhammad, we will have this for you. Don't look dead. Keep looking here. There's plenty, okay? Stop being greedy, all right? Look to how much is left for you. Don't look there. This is not, this is hasad. This is not good. You should be thinking, you should be celebrating that you should be hoping that my pile goes bigger and not forgetting that there's like 1 ton of sweets here. There's 1 ton. Okay, literally 1 ton, right? So, can you believe that someone has just come and interrupted my Warda? Okay, for you, we will have this. Khadija David. I have absolutely no idea who you are, Khadija David. First time I've seen your name, but for you, I'm gonna have a camera. All right? And for Shamaila, who's local, she obviously yani, can't last until next week. Maybe I might even look after it for you until next week. And Breen, I'm going to be eating chocolate all night. I'm a rock, by the way. At least I'm the one. Junaid, he's local. He'd want me to have the nice shiny one. Okay. Irfan, definitely he'd want me to have the caramel. Yes, you're all going to wait for me to get all of my sweets. For Safiya, I'll have this one. And let's see, where's Auntie Shakila? Because for her, I'm going to have two. Resh and Jesh, they're two twins. We've got to have two, yani, because they're twins. Yeah, okay. Roshan, Sidra is in Qatar. She definitely wants me to have yani, one for her and one for the chief, okay, because obviously he's far away. And Anam should normally be here. She's no doubt want me to look after hers, okay? No doubt. I mean, not look after hers, but to have hers. Bilal answering all these questions day and night. What do you think, Yani, for free? And then Shahzad Zia from Altrincham, he's not gonna come get his in time, I'll take care. Suraya Baji, obviously, she'd want me to have a caramel. And Shams from London, and Qaisara from Birmingham, I'll take theirs. That's it. Oh, no, Auntie Shakila's just come. All right, so we'll have this for her. Don't look to this. This is not mine, this is, there's for Arsalan by cardiologist. He definitely gets yani, one specialist. You know, this is for his heart health. All right? Then you get extra when it comes around again. But don't tell anybody else. Okay? Right, now you guys can share. All right? Don't look to my pile. You should be happy to share your own pile. All right? Honestly, man. All right. So we're celebrating Halima. We're celebrating, mashallah, look at all this behavior. Mashallah, mashallah. But I think that's enough. By the way, please feel free to take two or three. I'm in a generous mood today. Or I should say, Ibrahim's in a generous mood today. The online people are in a generous mood today. No hating. Saeed can only have half a sweet. He's not well enough to have a full sweet. All right. Although, actually, no, Saeed deserves one full sweet because he changed the... Did you notice? The speed bumps. You tell me you didn't even notice. The guy, and he killed himself getting him changed, and now nobody is giving him any love. He got rid of the, you know, the big mountain that used to be at the front. Now they put in some more human-sized speed bumps. You didn't notice? The fact that your car is still alive, yani, you didn't notice? You didn't notice, yani, that you don't have yani, sciatica and back pain anymore? You didn't notice? Chalo theek hai then. Fat lot of use that was then. Right, folks, today we are going to cover the text in Arabic. Imam al-Hajjawi, he says, alayhi rahmatullah, wa aqalla sunnah ba'da al-jumu'ah raka'atan, wa aktharuha sittun, wa yusannu laha an yaghtasila wa taqaddam, wa yatanazzafa wa yatatayyaba wa yalbasa ahsana thiyabihi wa yubakkira ilayhi mashiya. I don't think we'll do all of that, but let's see. The text that we're covering, the minimum sunnah units after the Friday prayer are two. with six the maximum. It is the sunnah to take a bath, as explained previously, and to cleanse and perfume oneself, to wear one's best clothes, and to walk to the masjid early. That's what we're going to be covering today, inshallah. So the last thing that we covered last week, was just an overall summary of how we should approach the ghusl. And we've been speaking about ghusl now for a while. Obviously, our conclusion is that it is not obligatory, as is the position of the majority of scholars, the Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi'i school. The Hanabila also consider it to be a sunnah as well. And obviously, Sheikh Uthaymeen consider it to be obligatory. Imam al-Shawkani, Ibn al-Qayyim, yani a number of scholars, obviously Ibn Hazm, the Zahiri school, they consider it to be obligatory. And we took the position of Ibn Taymiyyah on this issue. And our class position is that it's obviously a highly emphasized sunnah. One should try to do it, and one should absolutely do it, must do it. If they have been working, there could be some potential sweat and work and BO and all the rest of it, then they should be very cognizant of their situation. And that's our class position. And then we spoke off the back of that on the issue of generally how we approach the ghusl. And we said this very important point, which is going to become clearer now, that the ghusl is not about cleaning your body. It's a spiritual cleaning. It's a process. It's a dhikr. It's something that when you do it, you're thinking about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You're thinking about the akhirah. You're thinking in a spiritual way. It literally is a spiritual bathing, because it's just not possible to clean yourself with four handfuls of water. And so when you're rubbing that water and spreading it over your body, your mentality is all that this is for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is very much more than just yani cleansing. Then purification, which is going to be the word that's going to be used here, وَيَتَطَهَّر, right? He then makes tahara. This, someone asked this question last week, oh, but I thought tahara was always meaning spiritual purification as well. And of course, she was right. And these words, they have specific meanings and general meanings. So if you were to use that, go and make tahara, right? It would mean go and do wudu. It would mean go and do ghusl. But when you've got the word tahara next to ghusl, then it has to mean something else. Make sense? So ghusl then takes on the spiritual minimal washing, and tahara now turns into like to make it your best bath ever. Lots of water, lots of soap, lots of what? Basically cleanse yourself. Make sure that you're using all the products that you're going to use. Now that's like what we would consider to have a bath or a shower, right? But ghusl, it's nice actually that there are certain words that you keep in the Arabic in your home, right? So like go and have a shower, go and have a bath. That should remain in your home. And that will also train people, especially the young girls, all right, that, I mean, obviously we're training all kids, but young girls specifically because of menstruation and coming out of menstruation and the like. It is important that we create that vibe in our homes. That's the big news. Protect This House. Protect This House is launched today, yeah, or yesterday. So if you go to almaghrib.org, I want to say almaghrib.org/PTH, probably something like that, or just type in Protect This House. That's obviously all about family, parents, politics, and the big part is on kids and parenting and tarbiyah. But yeah, so on this point of kids, they're the ones who are going to struggle to get their head around the idea of going into a shower and not actually having just a shower, that there's something called spiritual purification. And the easiest way to teach that is to keep the word ghusl. If you keep the word ghusl at home, I need to make ghusl, you need to make ghusl, right? Then it gets reserved for just a spiritual reason, like post-marital relations, post-menses, you know, this kind of thing. And if you keep the word ghusl, if you keep the word bath and shower, then people know that's just, you know, getting cleaned, getting cleaned up, using the full behavior. You know what I'm saying? So with that in mind, the ghusl obviously comes in two forms. There is a recommended one, and then there is an obligatory one. Recommended ones are like for entering Mecca, for entering into Ihram, for it can be, in our opinion, for Jum'ah, it can be stretched further not with primary evidences, but secondary and tertiary evidences, that any time before marital relations, any time before doing some significant act of ibadah, Laylatul Qadr, you know, these are, do not have direct evidences, but they are supported by the generality of Islam and principles, acts of worship. And you'll see, obviously, the Salaf and the Sahaba and the Imams, like Bukhari, of course, very famously, would do ghusl before any major kind of insertion into his sahih of a hadith. This is not a religious thing, but he would do it to sanctify the moment, the act that he was doing, add barakah to it. And so the recommended ones are in their own place. And then the obligatory ones are what we know about marital relations and all the rest of it. And what we said is that a nice way of looking at it is that anything that was done previously, any act that was done previously, and you need to do ghusl, this is normally an obligatory ghusl. So marital relations, just finished menses. Then we need to must do the ghusl. Anything in the future, so in a couple of hours I need to go Jum'ah, or I'm about to enter an ihram in a few, whatever, or I'm going to Mecca, or I'm going to anything in the future, the ghusl for that is not obligatory. It's a nice little kind of, what do you call that, a key, or something to remember. Yeah. Say it again. Eid Salah would fall into the same category, not obligatory. And the majority of scholars don't consider the Eid ghusl to be obligatory anyway. Okay, but it, for us it's easy, it falls straight into the category of the compared to Jum'ah. Washing the dead body, Awais gave a very good example there actually. Washing the dead body, there are some scholars that consider that to be obligatory. Okay, consider that to be obligatory. Now the real question is that how would you look at that? Would you look at that as something in advance? Or would you look at that as something that you've done? That's an interesting question, isn't it? Because you, huh? Done because you're seeing it, I've just completed it. It happens afterwards. And not done for it before. You know what's interesting? There are some scholars that considered that it should be done beforehand as well. No evidence for that, of course, but just a general kind of approach. But yes, the nas, the hadith itself, it clear that it's something that's done afterwards. The real question is how authentic is the hadith and what is the meaning of the wording. But anyway, in our position, washing the dead body, the person that is, only the one who washed it, not those that were involved in the general process, but the ones who were actually physically doing the washing, it is at least a sunnah for them. Okay? So, with that, so we're at the stage now where the Sheikh says, وَتَقَدَّمْ, and we've mentioned that before. Now, Sheikh Uthaymeen makes a point here. He goes that what he's referring to is that we mentioned before that it is recommended to do the ghusl for Friday. Like, this is something that, obviously, logical progression. The reason it's called that is because we're starting at the beginning and building up. And it's not possible all the time to completely ignore a subject until it actually comes in its right place. That's very, very difficult, right? But he tries his very, very best. But previously, he had to just throw in a side reference and say, yeah, that the ghusl for Jum'ah is not an obligatory one. And Sheikh Uthaymeen makes the point that the author of a Rawd al-Murbi', okay, which is this commentary here, which is probably the most kind of, you know, as I said, the most famous of its of the old kind of school commentaries on Zad al-Mustaqni', he took issue with this, and he said that fihi nazar, and this is useful for those who just study Arabic, okay, so you understand some of the words of contention. When we say contention, we mean that when you have a problem with something, you have a contention with something, yes? So when you have a problem in a statement of a scholar, one, you obviously want to show that you've got a problem, but two, you've got to remember the respect thing as well, because you're speaking about giants, right? So there's a whole politics around how you show your contention. You don't say the guy deviated, you don't say the guy was ignorant, or, you know, hardly ever do you say a guy made a mistake. rather you make a kind of a soft kind of statement. So some of the examples, the author of a role, he said, fihi nazar. Fihi nazar, best translated is fihi nazar. Let me try and think of how the best way to translate this would be.
Has a view or serves.
But how do we make it passive? Because it's passive, right? Fihi nazar yani is definitely a passive statement. So let's say that someone said, I covered this before. I covered this before. And I know that he hasn't covered, or I don't think that he's covered before. Or in fact, I know that he hasn't covered it before. It doesn't matter what I think. And I want to make it clear that he didn't. But I want to show respect. So I say, I don't know about that. You know when you say that? I don't know about that. That is close to fihi nadhar. I don't know about that. Yeah. Now, I don't know about that. It's not me being a definitive statement that I know that he's 100% wrong. You know what I mean? I've kind of indicated that, okay, maybe, possibly. Even the word possibly, maybe, possibly, this could also be translated from thing. The actual literal translation of fihi nadhar is that there is another way of looking at this. There's another way of looking at this. So imagine an author writes a statement, then puts like a footnote, and you go to the footnote, and he goes, there's possibly another way of looking at this. That is how fihi nadhar can be translated. Right? Nadhar actually coming from to see, to look. So this could be seen in a different light. So he's trying to basically indicate that there is, yeah, you know, some point. And yeah, Awais gives, requires investigation, right? Is not a translation of fihi nadhar, but that's another very good way of showing your disapproval or contention, that we need to look into that. Yeah? Or that requires investigation. Or I'm not too sure about that. Yeah? Or, and then Awais lifts it even further. He's now increasing the kind of the intensity. وَفِي قَلْبِ شَيْءٍ. فِي قَلْبِ شَيْءٍ means that, you know what, my heart's not, it's not fully in line with that. I don't completely agree with that. My heart still feels a little bit perturbed over that. You know, I've got a bad feeling about this. Yani, all of these kind of phrases. And if you look at what all these phrases have, they all share that they're not criticizing that person directly. They're keeping it kind of respectful, but they are indicating, you know, whatever. I forgot what we used to call it when you're in a panel and everyone wants to release a statement and you... I've done it myself so many times. What do you call it? What? So there's obviously when a panel releases a fatwa and I disagree, what's it called?
Abstention?
Not abstention. But I want the people to read the fatwa that I abstained. Okay, so abstained is abstained. But no, dissented is too strong. It's when I want people to know that I did not, I went with the vote, but personally I disagree with the position as an individual. We do that a lot, and you do get that in panels, and there's a phrase for it. It's not a veto, it's when you do your something. I forgot the phrase. No. It's a technical term. It's not like veto exception thingy. The reason this comes to mind actually is because someone said to me today, Abid Sami actually it was today. He said to me that he showed me a message. He came around and showed me a message on the phone. He goes, someone said that Abu Isa said that it's permissible to get your first house on mortgage. Your first house is allowed on a conventional mortgage, then anything after that is not permissible. Anything for business or rental purposes or whatever. And I said, no, that's not true. I never said that. I don't believe that either. And even more so, whether I believe it or not, or whatever, whatnot, that's not possible in a country like the UK, where how on earth that fatwa would stand. And maybe, you know, in the US, Canada, to a specific individual after analysis has been made of their rental circumstances, abilities, and references that they're not able to get and move to an area that's possible on a case-by-case basis for the case of darura. But as a fatwa like this, I said, that's completely false. Now, the interesting thing I was thinking when I said that to Abid Sami is actually where that fatwa came from. That fatwa is still running from Sheikh Yusuf Al-Qardawi, alayhi rahmatullah. Yusuf Al-Qardawi, when he started the fatwa committee, I want to say it was the European Council for Fiqh and Fatwa and Research, I want to say, but I have a feeling it was the precursor to that. So whatever existed before that. And I was studying, I was still a student then, I was studying under Sheikh Suhaib Hassan, hafizahullah. And Sheikh Suhaib Hassan was a member of that fatwa committee. Sheikh Yusuf Al-Qardawi was as well. And I remember when I was sitting in Sheikh Suhaib's lesson, I used to live in London back that time. We are talking about 25 years ago, probably, you know, probably 90s, I think. And Sheikh Yusuf Al-Qardawi had just given the fatwa to allow people in Europe, and at that time, really, Europe had nothing. It was only really the UK, but it was a European fatwa, that a person could give, could purchase a house via mortgage. This, of course, was before any Islamic options at that time, yeah? And he gave that fatwa then, and Sheikh Suhaib was on the panel, and he made his note, dissenting opinion or whatever the phrase is. The fatwa, he showed it to me in the collection of the fatawa, and it stated that we give this fatwa, the fatwa body gives this fatwa. Sheikh Suhaib also signed, but I want it to be noted. This is how it used to be phrased at that time. And we were discussing in our class, it was myself and Sheikh Suhaib and his other main student, which was Abu Rumaysa, Rafi'a from High Wycombe. We were trying to work out the best English translation of how to present when a person puts a note down to a general fatwa, that I do not support this individually, but as a panel, we obviously give a fatwa for the, we have to move as a panel. And so we give this fatwa, but Sheikh Suhaib did not agree at that time, and he was a dissenting opinion at that time. Whatever the reason we were speaking about dissenting opinions, whatever. Anyway, Sheikh Uthaymeen, he now wants to spend a bit of time on this dissenting concept. He goes, when the scholars say, when the ulama say, fihi nazar, fayanun, ya'ani, it means, annahu ghayr musallam. Wal ulama yu'abbiruna ahyanan biqawlihim fihi shay, idha naqalu kalam ghayrihim. So he's basically saying that the scholars, when they want to indicate that there's a problem with something, they use these phrases. So they say, fihi nazar. Another thing that they say is, fihi shay, that there's something in this that needs looking at. There's something more to this. Fihi shay. There's something in this. And Sheikh says, when a person says fihi shay, right, this is akhaf, this is a lighter and more polite statement than saying fihi nadar. Yeah, and fihi nadar is a little bit rude, he's basically indicating. And Sheikh Uthaymeen then criticizes the author of Ar-Rawd, and he goes, actually, when he says fihi nadar, actually, if wa fi qawlihi fihi nadar, nadar. He goes, as for him claiming that there's a problem with his statement, there's a problem with his saying that there's a problem. So he's kind of like hitting back on behalf of Imam al-Hajjawi. Okay? And he goes, and the reason that there's a problem is because he's wrong. And indeed, Imam al-Hajjawi did mention this before in the section of water, which was 13 years ago. Can you believe? Yani, I'm sure every human being, we can give them a pass, yani, on forgetting, because we completely forgot, yani, when we did water. Yeah? And that there was different types of water even. And he said that in that section, وَإِنِ اسْتُعْمِلَ فِي طَهَارَةٍ مُسْتَحَبَّةٍ كَتَجْدِيدِ وُضُوءٍ وَغُسْلِ جُمْعَةٍ. So, we're talking about now types of water, and different types of water fall into different categories. For example, used water and unused water. So sometimes used water can be used again, and other times used water, by definition, when we say used water, we mean water that has been used in wudu already. You might be thinking, what the hell is going on? You know, why are people using water? Well, water is a serious, restricted in terms of its usage, and people would use it again, and the drops would come off into the same pot, for example, and they'd use that again. Why not? We're not talking about what you spit out your mouth. We're talking about water flowing off a face, which is, as I said before, essentially clean anyway. You got to get off the, you know, this is why it's so important when you're studying these subjects to really change your perception. So for example, when we talk about wudu, if you're making wudu, it might be because you haven't made wudu all day. Your face will have a bit of dirt, bit of this, bit of that on it, whatever. But if you're following, making wudu like the sunnah, which is for every salah, you often see, you know, someone says, I'm going to make wudu. And he goes, why, you went to the toilet? You haven't been to the toilet. They're always connecting it to, got to break it, got to do something. No, I'm actually doing the sunnah of tajdeed al-wudu. It is a sunnah to make wudu for every prayer. It's not linked to dirt. It's not linked to having to go to the toilet. It's a spiritual thing. When you're doing it, it resets what you're thinking. You slow it down. You know, it has a drama to it. It has a drama to it. If you look at, you know, the very best of the terrorist films, the ones that do a good job of portraying us as terrorists, they'll make sure that they include a wudu scene. And they'll slow it right down, because there's nothing like blowing up a town but doing it purified. You know what I mean? You see them doing this, that, whatever. The drama is nice. And I like that. That's how we should be thinking. Yani, if you're going to go for salah, you know what I mean? And you make it your last salah. So, you know, it's good. So, the translation says that that the water can be used in any kind of non-obligatory or recommended purification, such as renewing wudu and the ghusl for Jum'ah. So, he did actually mention it back then, and so that is his stated and standard position. Anyway, then the author says, وَيَتَنَظَّفْ, and then he cleans himself, or he cleanses himself. Cleanses himself or cleans himself? Cleanses himself. Cleanses? Is that a verb? To the self. What's the difference between cleans himself and cleanses himself? Nothing? Gotta be. Gotta be a difference between cleanses himself and cleans himself. I don't know what the actual difference is, but if you're asking me, women cleanse themselves and men clean themselves. Because when I go into the bathroom, all I see is cleanser this, cleanser that, cleanser this, cleanser that, cleanser bakwas, cleanser this, and it's all little, you know, all fake stuff, like a pad or a little liquid. Yani, when you hear the word cleanse, it means soft. It means yani nakhre, basically. It's not a proper clean. If you clean yourself, you scrub yourself. If you're cleansing, you're kind of, isn't it? Is that just me being chauvinistic and male? That's probably what it is. I bet if you go look in the ChatGPT annals of the English language, that there is a softer connotation. It's the exact opposite, Shazad Salim. You've done nothing for our case whatsoever. You just said, when you clean yourself, you clean yourself. When you cleanse yourself, you remove the germs, bacteria, this, that, what. Bro, that's the exact opposite. When you cleanse a wound. No, we only clean wounds. It's only dentists that dab around like that. Google's saying, while both cleans himself and cleanses himself mean to make oneself clean, this is Google AI, by the way, there's no joke, all right? What's Google AI? Is that Open AI? Oh, right, it's their version, okay. Cleans himself is more general and used for everyday cleaning actions. While cleanses himself implies a deeper, more thorough cleaning. Throw that Google bakwas in the bin. Often with a figurative or spiritual connotation. Now it's come back to us. Now it's come back. Like removing negative energy. Or impurities from the mind or soul. You see? It's contradicted itself. There's absolutely no way that you are saying that cleansing is a more thorough cleaning And then in the next sentence, saying often with a figurative or symbolic or spiritual connotation. That's two contradictory terms. Correct. It's like not really cleaning. This is my point. It's symbolic. It's figurative. It's spiritual. Like a woman, you know, she's just like, it's figurative. It's a symbolic. If it was real, you'd get Yani the water and you'd go. And you'd get the soap and you wouldn't worry that it dries my skin. You would go, you're saying cleansing is stronger? No, not a few layers of skin. The few babakwas that you put on your skin. There's a big difference. No human being puts that on normal skin. I never put that in my skin in my entire life. You know why? Because I got no babakwas on my skin. Normal raw skin. Ladies are supposed to. Do not even go there about what ladies are supposed to or not. So, no, there's no way. I'm very comfortable with the idea that cleansing is soft. It's superficial. It's the type of cleaning that's not actual physical cleaning. It's spiritual. It's blah, blah. Okay? So, no one deep... Yeah, thank you, Hiba. No one deep cleanses their house. You only deep clean your house. Okay? Yeah. That's it. I'm not going to lie, Sid obviously is going on the attack now. You know, she's now taking it from 0 to 100. She said, I bet you use imperial leather on your face. Yeah? Which is fighting talk, isn't it? Well, I'll just tell you, Sidra, that I absolutely do. And there's nothing wrong with using imperial. Imperial leather is regal soap. Legit soap. Not the bakwas that you have today when you touch it, it all starts falling apart. You know what I mean? You know that it's a proper soap bar when the last thing that exists is that little flipping foil at the end. Yeah? And you know the amazing thing about imperial leather is that you can come back to imperial leather 2 years later, yeah? And it's still alive. It's still alive. Just add a little bit of water, but you hold it from the top part, yeah, the foil. It's people dissing imperial leather. They're born yesterday. Gen Z, Gen Alpha stepping to me with their bakwa soaps. Goat milk. Yeah, heated intestinal entrails of some yani sacrificed ram yani that's been fed on elderflower. Yani, shut up. Real ones use Dettol soap. Yeah, Ali, yeah, talk to me about Dettol soap. Talk to me about Dettol. My generation was water sticking Dettol. Mum would come into the bathroom, doesn't matter if you're a nunga or not, and say, why have you not put the Dettol in? No. Then she opens the bottle and dunks it in. And then you're jumping around going, that's a real washing. You lot and your cleansers with your pads. Haji. Listen, we've been scrubbed properly, bro. You know, listen. Don't get me excited. This is going to turn into a male-female thing. Up until now, this is actually me against cleansing. But I don't want it to turn into lady cleansing. Because that's a complete waste of time. All right. So, wa yatanazzaf. It's sunnah to do tanzif, as narrated in the sunnah. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that a person la yaghtasilu rajulun yawm al-jum'ati wa yatatahharu mastata'a min tuhrin. That no one. This hadith is, of course, one of the most important hadith in this chapter, Hadith Bukhari. The Prophet ﷺ said that nobody, let me get you the full version, Hadith in Bukhari, Hadith from a number point of view, Hadith number 883, that no man on the day of Jum'ah does ghusl and then cleanses himself or purifies himself from that which he is able to the level that he is able to, and that's indicating the amount of water available, etc., and then oils himself, and by that means specifically remove the harshness of the beard. That's specifically referring to the beard, and softening the appearance of the, because the natural default position of the male beard is that it was dusty and disheveled, because it's a very dusty environment and so on. And when a person will put on oil, which is expensive, firstly, can't do it all the time. And when it's done, you stick out. Like, you really stick out when you are in these kind of working class environments. And then you have like a soft, shiny kind of beard with a sheen. It's the sheen that you lose first in sandy environments. So then he oils himself and he anoints himself with the perfume of the hadith in Bukhari. The riwayah of Bukhari says his wife, yeah? And others translate this of the scent of the home, right? Now, the implication is the same, because the scent of a woman is different to the scent of a man. Now, I don't mean like we understand it, like female, male, and unisex. No. When you see in hadith the scent of a male, it means very strong smelling. When you see the scent of a woman, what's being indicated is two possibilities, depending upon the gathering. First of all, it can be scent, actual scent, but then that's highly restricted and not used in public. Therefore, it's called the one of the home, and it's used in the home because it can only be for mahrams and for one's husband or a female party, but very difficult because how would you wear it on the way there? You don't. It's something you carry with you and you apply over there, etc., etc. That's the rare usage of the word. The dominant usage of the word scent or any kind of smell that's being used for a female is its color. So it's about it being more of a mehndi type, henna type presentation than a smell itself. Or it still has a smell, so it's being used, but it's giving some kind of appearance. More the focus is on the appearance and not the smell, not the, on the pheromones, not on the, what is it that they contain that incites pheromones? What is it that that perfume contains? What's its connection to I've forgotten how it works. Anyway, so when the Prophet ﷺ is saying to use the perfume of the woman, of his wife, by that he's indicating there's no, that you go out, you go into town basically. You're applying everything that looks good, you're applying everything that smells good, you're putting like everything dominant. So you're doing a spiritual ghusl, you're really washing yourself up as well. You are putting on, this hadith, this version does not indicate the, this version of the hadith does not state the clothes, but that's in other hadith. So we know that he's going to put on his best clothes, and not only best clothes, you know, just in this environment, if you're about to wear white, you think again, isn't it? When you're going out in the rain, when you're going out in the snow, you literally hesitate and say, it's going to get more dirty, and you actively go for a darker color, because you know that there'll be a bit of splashes, there'll be a bit of, you know, whatever. So imagine being in that environment, where there is no concrete, where there is no, you know, splashing is the norm, and imagine in that environment where there's no washing machines and there's no clothes way to wash them regular, and you don't even have the water to wash regular, and you're talking about very dusty, very whatever, and you're being told to wear white. You know what I'm saying? So there's a real massive emphasis on you looking your absolute best, $1 million every time you go out to the Friday. The hadith continues, and so this is, of course, the hadith starts with no man does this, right? And then goes out and goes to the masjid, and he does not separate between the people. By that, he means that he's got there early and he hasn't got there late, so that he's climbing between people. You know, when you touch a person, to just, can you just move and let me get through? So he doesn't do that, all right? And then when he gets there, he prays whatever Allah has written for him. And by that, again, indicating that he arrived early in the Duha time, so he's praying two after two after two, and this is not in the category of the pre-Jum'ah Sunnah. This is nothing to do with the Jum'ah. This is about getting there early and filling up the time. And then he stops and listens very, very carefully while the Khatib speaks. وَيَنْصِتُ إِذَا تَكَلَّمَ الْإِمَامِ. There's no man that does all of this. إِلَّا غُفِرَ لَهُ مَا بَيْنَهُ وَبَيْنَ الْجُمْعَةِ الْجُمْعَةِ الْأُخْرَى. No man will do this except that he'll be forgiven for all of the sins in between this Jum'ah and the next one. In the riwayah of Sahih Muslim, and then 3 days on top of that as well, meaning it's more yani powerful as well. So simply put, if a person wants to get, and Ibn Hajar makes a comment on this hadith famously, he goes, if a person wants the actual reward of Jum'ah, the reward of it removing all the sins of the week plus 3 days, that person must make ghusl, must purify themselves the best way possible, must apply either oil if relevant and the best scent that they have, must wear the best clothes that they have, must come early to the masjid, must pray at least something, and then must listen to the khatib with a proper ear, not just random, but with a ghor, yani real focus upon the imam. Then pray with the imam. That is the person that's going to achieve the reward of the Jum'ah. There are other rewards of Jum'ah, which we'll speak about maybe in next week's lesson, but that's separate. This is just actually making the prayer, not about what time and what early, the time that you get there. Anyway, Sheikh then says, as we've been saying so far, وَالتَنَظُّفْ أَمْرٌ زَائِدٌ عَلَى الْإِغْتِسَالِ. It's important that you understand that cleaning or cleansing is something above and beyond a ghusl, okay? And it is about getting rid of any bad smells and the source of those bad smells. And of course, cleansing is now referring to the natural fitrah, cleaning. So we should say about that. So that basic, and hair and nails are the two main causes for that. Because nails, they gather dirt underneath and that starts to smell, especially if you don't have the ability to remove it. And hair, every time that you have hair, you have an increase in heat, you have an increase in sweat, and that's what that smells. So the reason that underarms and pubic areas are the most smelliest part is because of the hair, right? And it's not the only reason, but the hair makes it worse, which is why the Sharia has commanded for its removal. And upon this, therefore, we need to say, Sheikh Uthaymeen says, that it is sunnah. It is sunnah. Now, this is important to differentiate what he means here. To shave the pubic area, حَلْقُ الْآنَ وَنَتْفُ الْإِبْتِ, and to pluck the underarm hair. Okay? Now, plucking, obviously, is a more permanent but more painful procedure, right? And shaving is obviously a quicker but less painful procedure. And the pubic area obviously is more sensitive, so plucking would be hurting more. And so that's why the shaving is something which is legislated. This is the right word to use. Because it's permissible to use creams, it's permissible to use wax, it's permissible to use a razor, it's permissible to even use a machine, it's permissible to use a scissors. All of this is permissible. But the sunnah is exactly what the Prophet ﷺ said. Because when in the hadith of the fitrah and in the hadith of cleansing, he said cutting the nails, yeah? He said plucking the underarmpit hair and to shave the pubic area. Okay? To continue, and hafu shar, which is to trim. Haf is trimming. Okay? Now, trim, haf, is different to, what's that called? When you, because trim, what does trim mean?
Shorten.
Okay, so there's two types of shortening. You know when you have people whose hair goes over their lip? That's obvious, you're shortening it, because it's not allowed for it to be over your lip. Okay, but like this is shortened, because you put the machine on and it, and you call it trimmer, don't you? But that's not the same trimming as this. So how do you differentiate between these two? Like, trimming, why am I restricting in my head trimming to only being excess hair that's hanging? Because the reason I say that is حَفُّ الشَّارِب means to trim the moustache. And when we say trim the moustache, there is a difference of opinion amongst the scholars. So the Malikiya, for example, so I did mine today, for example, and you can see that it's actually quite a lot. Yeah? Now you'll see, for example, the Malikiya consider that the requirement for the moustache is that it should look you should be able to see the skin behind it. It's like a real close cut. And there are other scholars that interpret حَفُّ الشَّارِبْ as shaving it. And that's why you see people that shave it entirely. It can be argued that the majority of scholars said that it's actually makruh to shave the moustache, and that's not what its intended meaning is, and that rather it is to trim it. And to trim it means to keep it short. Now, keeping it short does not necessarily mean the top part, but obviously keeping the top part short is going to play its impact on it becoming longer at the bottom. Like, what is the obligation? Yani, certainly my position, and the position of the majority of scholars, is that trimming the moustache has no connection to how big and bushy the actual moustache is. Does that make sense? It could be massive, it could be literally, but as long as it doesn't come underneath the lip and get involved in the food and, that's what's not allowed. That not allowed in Sunnah to, what would that be called? Trim. Maybe it is cut then, and maybe trim is then what you do to the rest of it then. Snip. Huh? Snip. Snip.
You'd cut a fringe
and you don't trim a fringe. You're right. That's what we would. That's what we would say. But I bet that today that trim could be used.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You do. Yeah. You do say trim. You do say trim. Yeah. Trim means to shorten. Shorten would be like it could be more general. Yeah. That's also good. Yeah. You're trimming an edge, so you need to add something to make it clearer. So you would shorten the moustache. So if you said trim the edge, it's very clear what that means. Yeah, that is exactly what the Sunnah is trying to achieve. What if you said shorten the moustache? I think that shorten the... Taking it closer to the skin. I think that's what we would be intending, but I think it could also be understanding that you're shortening it. Anyway, I don't think that language can help us in this. You've got to demonstrate. And so let me say that the majority of the scholars, when it comes to the moustache, they are referring to anything hanging over the lip, and it needs to be taken. So this is also from the Sunnah of the Fitrah, and to take from the nails, to clip. Taqleem. Taqleem means clipping. Okay, cutting the nails. لكن من المعلوم أن هذا لا يكون في كل جمعة. Because of course it's well known, Sheikh Uthameen says, that this is not something that needs to be done every Jum'ah. This is not something which grows back every Jum'ah indeed. And it's not something which is required every Jum'ah. And فقد لا يجد الإنسان شيئا يزيله. Sometimes a person won't even find anything to cut after a week. Okay, من هذه الأمور الأربعة يعني these specific four things يعني from plucking hair, from shaving down below, from cutting the trimming the mustache, and from cutting the nails. وقد وقت النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم هذه الأشياء الأربعة ألا تزيد على 40 يوما. And the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم has actually given a time limit for these in the hadith of Anas. I want to say, is it Anas? Yeah, hadith of Anas radiallahu anhu, the famous hadith in Muslim, where Anas said that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam told us, so he didn't quote him, he said the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam told us that in every 40 days at least once we must pluck the underarm, cut the nails, shave the down below, and trim the moustache, once every 40 days. So that's your limit. As for the fuqaha, Shaykh Uthameen says, as for the fuqaha, the fuqaha, the jurists, they said, إِنَّ حَفَّ الشَّارِبْ فِي كُلَّ جُمْعَةٍ, other than for the trimming of the moustache, which needs to happen every Jum'ah. Now, the word need is, actually this goes back to last week. Yeah, I need, look at this word. إِنَّ حَفَّ الشَّارِبْ فِي كُلِّ جُمْعَةٍ. If we translate this statement literally, it means, indeed, verily, the cutting or the trimming of the moustache is on every Friday. is every Friday. This is basically the should thing. You should cut it every Friday. You're falling into that, basically, that trap. They want to encourage it. They can't go full way and obligate it. They can't even say it's a sunnah, but they're saying this is what should be done. And of course, that is what should be done. The mustache is definitely something which grows very quickly, and a week probably sounds about right. Certainly for myself, certainly for the majority of men, it's not like underarm or down below or anything like that. Now, let's talk about some of this, because I don't know whether we'll get an opportunity later to speak about this. So let's cover this. First, I've already spoken about you can use anything, right? And now, obviously, there are a lot of products like those shavers that come with guards and things like that to avoid nicking and the like. It is important that you recognize when it comes to the private parts, we need to separate. We need to separate this. I should have planned this properly, maybe with diagrams, but let's just try to do it. For a female, the definition of al-'ana. So, you know, the word 'ana is specifically the pubic area. Okay, actually, the linguists, they differ over what 'ana means. Is 'ana the pubic area, or does it mean pubic hair? The problem with pubic hair is that's a very big phrase. Because for a male, that would be on the testicles, at the bottom of the penis. It would mean the part which is above it. But basically, what we're talking about is the pubic bone. For a female, it would be referring to the pubic bone. That would be above the vagina. That is, if you are referring to pubic hair, then you're talking about all of it. Whereas if you understand al-'ana as the pubic bone itself, then that's a different ball game. That would mean then, for example, for a female, that the vagina itself is not involved. For a male, it would mean then that the testicles are not involved. That's very important. And that, of course, makes it a different ball game in terms of ease. And that's why shaving, if you're ever thinking, how the hell are you meant to shave testicles, for example? It's very, very difficult, very dangerous as well. Not very dangerous, but yani, it can be. And so, the scholars seem to be comfortable with the idea that al-'ana is the pubic bone area. And therefore, you're talking about above the penis. And therefore, that's obviously a lot more flat, a lot more safer. And therefore, now shaving this area makes more sense. Okay? For the female, the same. Shaving is the sunnah. It is permissible to use everything else. So whether that's wax, whether that's creams, whether that's epilatory products, whether it's laser, whether it's blah, blah, all of this is permissible. Okay? The next question is, what about, for example, the anal region or the backside? And the scholars, they mention this, that it is sunnah to do this area as well, but not obligatory. And they mentioned as part of the wisdom, and of course it's correct, is that it is that an area that is kept clean like that, especially the backside, would minimize then the spread of najasa, minimize, especially when water, istinja, is not the norm, and istijmar is. Istijmar, of course, being using toilet paper in our modern time and using clods in the previous times. So istijmar, back in the day, you know, having hair is a disaster, right? When you're using lots of water like today, hair is not such a major issue. If you're using soap and water to wash your backside, hair, no hair, adi. If you're using a pressure washer like people use, adi. You know what I mean? Hair is not now so important as it used to be. However, it's still a sunnah to remove that. And again, that can be via shaving, it can be via whatever is needed. The next big question, what if you can't do it yourself, right? Can you get other people? And obviously, those who are not married, you are going to be horrified to find that the only use actually for a husband and a wife is to do this yani for each other. Maybe children come second, maybe other uses, to cook dinner might be third. But there are people that do that, all right? Partners do it for each other. This is something which is no discussion or anything. This is not a fiqh of course it's a fiqh discussion, but you should know that there's no awra between a husband and wife. So the question is not a big question. The bigger question is, what if you are not married? Is it permissible for the removal of hair from areas of awra
which does not come under the area of necessity. This is the debate amongst the scholars. Because there are some scholars that consider this removal of this hair to not be an obligation. So to step back a bit, is it obligatory? Are you in sin if you allow your nails to go to 60 days, underarm hair to 3 months, 6 months down below, for example? Are you a sinner, or have you gone against the sunnah? We're not talking about disgusting. Of course it's disgusting. This is something separate. We're talking about the legal ruling. Are you in sin? And the scholars differ. They said that the Prophet ﷺ emphasized that these are the sunan of the fitrah, that these are the recommended matters and that they are the principles of purity for all human beings and they should be done. Whereas others said that no, this is obligatory. So the scholars are divided on this point. And in my opinion, I do believe it's sunnah and that one is not in sin, but they should treat it like it's an obligation. They should treat it like it's an obligation because it would be obligated via other ways. Yani cleanliness is the hallmark of the believer. You know, the believer should be absolutely everything but stinking, honestly. It's not becoming of the believer at any time. Like, let them complain about everything about us, that we take their jobs and their houses and their flipping grooming gangs, bakwas, but don't tell us that we stink, yara. Please, yani, because we of all people, yani, day and night washing ourselves for crying out loud. Cleaning our bloody ears every flipping day. These people never cleared their ears in their bloody whole week. Are you kidding me, bro? You know what I mean? Where the amount of recommendation for Ud and Tib and the Sadaqah that it is, and the Prophet ﷺ said it's been made beloved to me from your dunya. Yeah, and you know this Tib and come on. You know what I mean? So we should treat it like it's something which is serious. So serious enough that you can allow a stranger to remove it for you. You know, like these waxing kind of places, they do that, isn't it? In private parts and things. And the Hanbalis said yes. The Hanbalis said that it is to be seen, like the situation is to be seen the same way as when the doctor has the permission for the need. So a doctor's not allowed to look at the awrah until there's a need for the doctor to look at the awrah. Likewise, this person in the shop is not allowed to be doing that until the moment where the person says, I can't do it, or I'm too scared to, or I've messed it up, or I, whatever, and I want you to do it. This is not some kind of laziness. Laziness is not allowed, but if they can't do it for some reason, and in particular we are referring to those areas where, like for example, backside, etc., or those areas which are difficult to get to, some of the private parts possibly. Could it be argued that maybe I want to, for my underarms, do something which is whatever? It's not awra anyway, so the situation is more flexible. You get what I'm saying? And so therefore, our position would be what the Hanbalis have ruled on. That when there's a need, and by definition the need is that you are unable to do it, then that's something which we support. And Allah knows best. All right? All right, let's take some questions. Let's go online first, then you guys can then pick it up from there. Since the hadith also mentions circumcision, and we agree that this is wajib for the males, wouldn't some scholars say that this indicates wujub? Absolutely, and it's a very good point. That's why I believe that the safer position when it comes to all of this stuff is to understand it that to be an obligation. Okay, you should see and treat it like an obligation, knowing that if you messed up your dates and you got it delayed, you've got that kind of almost that tasalli that it's not maybe obligatory in the first place, kind of thing. Yeah. My mother has Alzheimer's, so she's not aware and she's not able to clean the area. Nor is it safe to give her the razor. Should I clean it for her? Yes, you should. Okay. Yes, you should. The hadith to remind ourselves, the hadith of Abu Huraira radiallahu anhu, that five are the acts which are akin to the fitrah, or the acts of the fitrah: circumcision, shaving pubic hair, cutting the nails, plucking the hair under the armpits, and clipping the moustache. They use clipping. Clipping. That's good as well, clipping, isn't it?
Because you can't shorten with clipping. I like that. Amal said, trim is to take a little bit off, cut is to take more off, shave is to take it all off. I like that. I think that's right, you know. When you think of the word cut, you don't think of a small amount, do you? And trim is like a little bit. That's very good. That makes a lot of sense to me, that. Yeah. Questions here? Yes.
Going back to the circumcision point, mm-hmm. what would you say to like a 40-year-old male revert?
Yeah, we would say that it needs to be done. And I mean, nowadays it's nothing, man. They use all kinds of local anesthetics and dash of morphine afterwards. You know, I've told you my story about circumcision and the Jews around here, no? Obviously, the Muslims, man, we used to trust them to do a good job. They're rubbish, man. You know, back in the day when they used to have honor in their profession, now it's just a business, isn't it? So they use the bell or whatever it's called. You know, the bell or ring or?
Ring,
bell, whatever, bagwas. Anyway, the point is that thing. And it's only because it's quicker and cleaner, you get a person in and out. And one thing you find with the Jews is that they're not interested in no rings or bells or bagwas. They're like all full khanjar behavior, yeah? Proper nice big dagger behavior. They are, you know, just like they take their meat seriously, they take their circumcision seriously. You get what I'm saying? So we were always looking for the Jews when we were looking for circumcision for kids and stuff. And they do a proper job, man. Proper job. You know, you come out of there, you think, yeah. Because Qasam, yani, you know, who did we use the ring for? We can't even expose all the kids now. But the rings were rubbish, Shaz. They were rubbish, and there's a couple of prominent people that are in our community here that use that ring, whatever, and I am so upset with them. That's what I'm saying. If you can't beat them, join them, and all that rubbish, and then people just jump into it. It's just horrible. It's got to be a proper thing. Got to. Let's have a look at this. I like to grow my nails as they look pretty, but try to keep them clean. What's the ruling on this? No, this is a problem. Use fake nails. It's better. Don't use your real nails. We should cut the nails and whatever. But is a woman in sin if she has very clean nails that are as clean as not having the nails and they're a little bit longer because she wants to... I don't think that she is in sin, but she's going against the sunnah and she's taking a risk, okay? And she shouldn't do that. But yeah, so back to the point for the revert. It is obligatory upon them, and if they absolutely, you know, can't do it, then they can't do it. And we find them a more, you know, lenient position. Removing the hair in awra areas, is the need also that it is only for those that are single?
Huh? I think he's saying, do we have to do it for single?
Yeah. This has nothing to do with, like, you only remove it if you're married. I'm trying to give the question a chance, but I think I'm misreading it, something. And we did cover circumcision, actually, in a lot of detail. Plastibel, I was right. It wasn't a ring. Plastibel. Oh, is it? No, I definitely use plastibel. But the ring, I have also heard somewhere.
Ring is common now.
Ring is what the common thing is? Okay, plastibel, ring. Is the need in allowing others to remove their hair determined by the importance it has in how we present ourselves as Muslims rather than the presence of sin if you don't do it? And this obviously is a very good question, and it's a legal question. And we should absolutely do it based upon the sin. The legal ruling should be the imperative. However, as I said, when the legal ruling is not agreed upon, then you start using secondary matters, you know, which is like that a person should present themselves in the best way, etc. Okay? And Allah knows best. The question is, meaning a married person wouldn't go to another person to do it. Oh, right. As in,
Exposing your aura in a waxing salon, for example, is this only acceptable for people that are single? Because married folk have their partner to help remove hair. What a question. That's a sick question. I've got absolutely no idea how to answer that one. I mean, the reason that she's asking that question is because she knows that where's the need? And she's right. Where is the need? Why are you going and showing your aura to another lady? And she'll turn around and say, do you think I'm mental that I'm going to let my husband do my waxing down there? That's what she's going to say. And I would say, do you think I'm mental that I would accept? Like I'd do it anyway. So, what's my answer? Allahu alam. I think it's permissible. I think it's permissible. I don't think the matter is that strict. Especially from woman to woman. Yani, I don't think that the matter is as strict as we may think. Right?
But you just said you can't do it.
So, yeah, we're saying that you can't do it. Now, what is by definition can't do it? Like, I'll give you an example. If a woman was to come to say to me that I don't know whether my husband can do this or not, but I'm not willing to find out. I've seen what he does when I tell him to cut the carrots and to cut the cucumbers. And there's not a chance that I'm letting my guy do that behavior. I don't think that's like the worst thing to say. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. I'm being told by Nameless, there's no name, that the Plastibel is the ring method. I think that could solve the issue. There you go. That's the mystery solved. You see, this is why, when you open this door, then the situation goes thinking. She said, providing the woman work of the salon is a straight woman. Now, this is true. This is now, there's all kinds of bakwas going on inside those places, isn't it? You have no idea what the hell they are. It might be probably rare to get now a straight woman in a thingy. I've never been, I've got no idea, but I mean, I get the feeling that they're full of bakwas, probably. Often people go to a clinic to get certain hair removed permanently, i.e. laser, and it means exposing the aura, but once the treatment is complete, then you're pretty much quite clean for years to come. Yeah, I'd do that. I think that's all right. Okay. The device used is a Plastibel. Then the string is tied around the foreskin, very tight to cut circulation and kill the excess foreskin. And 10 days later, the excess skin should fall off unharmed. Yeah, that's what I seem to remember. So it is Plastibel. Yeah. Any other questions? We done? Yep. Yes. Man, I was expecting something and good fun, and then you... It was so drama, and you went, I'm thinking, bloody hell. This is going to be, what kind of knife? Do I use a razor? Is it Gillette, the best a man can get? Yeah, and then one goes, right, it's a close for Juma. What a letdown that was. Go on then, son. That's a good point, and we'll discuss that next week, inshallah. All right, barakallahu feekum. Subhanakallahumma wa hamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka allahumma wa atubu ilayk. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Hayyakum Allah.